Blog Talk Radio.
Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. And I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And in the presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I see aspiring to be free. And when I call to thee and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Within and without, above and below, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. Without and within, below and above, yeah, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Lord of light and love, everything I find in tune with the divine. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And when I call to thee and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. For to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shabbat Shalom, Holy Angel of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. I sense your presence.
Thank you for joining me here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols George, and I am your hostess. The music you were listening to there at the beginning of the show is I Sense Your Presence. It's by Shemshai. And I just want to extend a welcome to you, whether you are coming in and joining the show for the first time or whether you've listened in the past and you're coming back and joining me here again. I do see some people in the chat room that I've seen before, so that's exciting to have you here again. And here at Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I look at different ways that compassion exists in our lives, how to remove our blocks, resistances, frustrations, and more. And some weeks I'm discussing different aspects of how compassion is in our life and affects our life and the different areas of compassion. Some weeks I'm doing more exercises and practical implementations. Our guest last week did some really great exercises. If you missed that show, go back and catch the archives on that because she did some beautiful meditations. And then many times I've got guests on the show. Like, for example, I've got a guest here tonight, and I've got a lot of different people coming up throughout the year with different topics. So that's really exciting. Matter of fact, most of the year is booked up with guests right now. And that gives you a chance to learn about their work and how other things complement and work with compassion. And then I also have different musical artists along the way. Earlier this year, Stephen Halpern. The end of last year, I had Claire Hedin on the show. Also had Jill Mattson on the show earlier. If you missed those shows, go back, catch them in the archives. Coming up in 2 weeks, I've got 7-time Grammy nominee Peter Kater coming on. So that's also going to be a very magical evening to have. And so it's a great variety here on the show, a lot of different things that I look at and address. And in my own work, what I do is I focus on helping people find and use compassion in their everyday lives. And I've created the Genesis Clearing Statement, which some of you have experienced on previous shows. If you missed that, you can actually go back to last fall around in September in our archived shows. And Kevin Baird, one of our other hosts here, he did a great show with me, and we used the Genesis Clearing Statement in that show. So if you missed it, you can go back and catch it then. And also, I've authored 2 books titled Activating Compassion and Activating Compassion in the Workbook. Soon to be releasing 2 more books, though they're going to be based on relationships. I've also created the Compassion Tour, which is a multi-state nationwide tour, including workshops, retreats, seminars, book signings, and fundraising events. I'm working on putting together some more things here for 2013 in the fall. And you can follow all of the events, whether they're on the tour or whether there are other events I have going on, at jessieannicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. And that link is at the bottom of the show description, so you can always catch it there. And there's also an option for gifting the tour if you can't make it to some of the events but you want to support the work I'm doing, like helping me get out to the fundraisers, things like that. You can also just take an option to gift the tour there. So lots of opportunities, and I actually have several workshops between now and the end of August, so you might want to check those out. There's some very exciting ones happening. And just a reminder, if you enjoy this show, make certain that you share it with your friends and family, significant others. Go ahead and share it with those people out there in your social media world, because I've found that by sharing things with my connections, there's something there a lot of times that they're really needing, whether I knew it or not. So you could really be helping somebody with something that they need by doing that. And, of course, anybody else that you feel inspired to share it with, they can always come back, listen to it in the archives at their convenience. And they just use the same link to come in the show that you used to get here tonight. Also, they can go to the archives and find them in 2 places. They can go to my website at jessieannicholsgeorge1, that's the number 1.com, and they can also go to facebook.com/activatingcompassion/notes, and all of the archive shows are there as well. So before we get started on everything, as those of you who have listened to the show before know, I like to delve into the book, The 72 Names of God. It's by Yehuda Berg. And I love Yehuda's work because he kind of functions a lot like I do. And when I say that, that's because he likes to take these big complex subjects and topics and put them into everyday words. And what I like to do is just to randomly open, because that's so much more fun. It always seems to open to a perfect message for what we're doing in the night. And by the way, this message then gets displayed on my website in my page, the Jesse Ann Nichols George page of the Main Street Universe section, because what I've got on my webpage is a whole section for Main Street Universe and all of our hosts there, so that's really cool. You could go in and check out some of their things and what they're doing and see pictures of us and things like that. Now, I'm going to just kind of randomly open and see what we get tonight. And tonight we have Great Escape. And the caption that he has with this is, "We're in prison and we don't even know it." The insight that he has for this name of God, Great Escape, is prison, you ask? Unquestionably. We're hostages to the constant pressure to outdo friends and colleagues. We're in bondage to our reactive whims and self-absorbed desires. We're captive to our jobs and financial pressures. We're prisoners to other people's perceptions of us. We're incarcerated by our own need for other people's acceptance. Want to break out? The ego is the foundation of all forms of misery. It compels us to convince others that we're right even when we're wrong, and even when we know we're wrong. Ego gives us the illusion that we act freely, but in reality, we are captive to its desires. When a person denies that he or she has an ego, well, that is just the ego hard at work, doing its job, patrolling the prison grounds. If an individual cannot recognize his or her own ego in a situation, the ego simply blinded the person by placing this individual into solitary confinement. Ego is a ball and chain that anchors us to the physical dimension and blocks our connection to spiritual growth. Yet it is only in the spiritual realm that true joy and fulfillment can be found. Now, this is going to be interesting to see how this ties in with my guest and the topic tonight. And the meditation that Yehuda gives with this name is, this name brings the greatest of all freedoms, escape from ego-based desires, selfish inclinations, and the me first mentality. In their place, you gain life's true and lasting gifts, family, friendship, and fulfillment. And the way that this name is pronounced, Great Escape, it's pronounced Lamed Aleph Vav. Okay, that's Lamed Aleph Vav. And again, that message will be up on my website. I usually get it up within 24 hours, oftentimes within an hour or two after the show, so that's readily available. Now, as we start to delve into our topic tonight, because we do have this really great guest on tonight, and our guest that we're going to be bringing on is Ra Genny, and I hope I pronounced that right. She'll probably correct me a few times because I know I'm struggling a little bit with getting the right pronunciation there. But as we delve into this, I mean, I wonder, do times really have to be as chaotic as we make them? Now, these are just some thoughts to think about here. And what causes the strong chaos? Well, in looking around at things, I'm realizing that oftentimes it is because we are living on extremes, living in a polarity, fighting and resisting the opposite side from where we're at. We give things all kinds of labels, such as good, bad, hard, easy, divine, evil. Yet, aren't all of these simply experiences and opportunities to learn our likes and dislikes, our preferences, and so on? What if instead of seeing that which is different or polar opposite as so-called bad, we see its value and purpose? What if we learned how to work with our polar opposite instead of hating it and resisting it? Now, most people feel that in order to do this, they have to agree with it, love it, and support it. And actually, what we are looking to do is learn how to work in harmony with it. Learn how to ride with the flow of currents in our lives, much like learning to work with the moon cycles or seasons of the year. Regina Michaels talks about these concepts in her book, Unflappable, 6 Steps to Staying Happy, Centered, and Peaceful No Matter What. And when we spend time and energy fighting, we block ourselves from gaining the benefits of both where we're standing and from the polar opposite. However, when we're able to embrace that flow and the natural cycles of polarities, then we can progress easier and with greater happiness and peacefulness. Everything in the universe has a natural polar opposite. It realizes this necessity in order to keep going. Now, when I look at polar opposites, it's seeing the energy for what it is and not as good or bad. Imagine if destruction or death never happened. Okay? There wouldn't even be standing room on this planet. You know, there would be no room for cars or houses, or trees would have no space between them. Now, destruction doesn't have to be bad. It serves a purpose in the cycle of life. What most people are really resisting is the violence that is used to cause destruction. However, just as easily, destruction could be done consciously, such as taking down a building that's ready to collapse and it's unsafe for people to be in. See, the key is not to resist, avoid, or fight it, but to learn how to work with it. And that's what creates harmony and synergy. It's like taking 5 employees and they all have different skills, and that can create an amazing company. Now, if all the employees have their skills being used in valuable ways, then the company can thrive. But if the employees are forced to do things that are not natural for them and are not allowed to be themselves within their job, they start getting resentful, insecure, withdrawn, and disruptive. And the company then also struggles. So a company who has all 5 of the employees that are alike limits itself to the number of people that they can reach, for example. But with diverse employees, they can reach a much larger clientele. So you're kind of getting the idea where I'm going with this, right? That diversity can be a real asset. Those opposites can be a real asset. So I ask you these questions before we get ready to take a short break here. Where are you living your life, in resistance or harmony? Are you reaping the drain or energy of your polarities? And what can you do to create a more peaceful relationship with the polarities in your life? Now, this week, our guest is focusing on a component of compassion that is related to the aspect in my books of give me, give me, giving. Excuse me. And with this aspect, we realize that blocks in our lives are oftentimes created through conflicts that we are creating. And in this chapter, I discuss how sometimes giving to others means saying no to them, or that we may be giving not to give, but to give, and which that then creates a conflict instead of a harmony. So oftentimes we may think we are giving to something worthwhile, only to really be giving to something that is destructive. In putting this in relation to my guest, we may also be giving without allowing ourselves to receive from others. I'm going to take a short break, and when we return, I will have Regina Michaels, and she will be sharing the work that she does with being unflappable and how to stay happy, centered, peaceful, no matter what. The song that I have for you during our break tonight is called Dreaming with Wings. It's also known as Freedom, Freedom. It's by Claire Hedin. And if you'd like to find out more about her work, you can go to her website at clairehedin.com, which is www.clarehedin.com. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Compassion in the Midnight Hour, and my name is Jessie Ann Nichols-George, and I am your hostess this evening. You were just listening to a song called Dreaming with Wings, also known as Freedom, Freedom by Claire Hedin. And again, you can find out more about her work and music at www.clairehedin.com. That's C-L-A-R-E-H-E-D-I-N.com. I would like to bring on my guest tonight, Ragini Michaels, and she is the founder of Facticity Trainings, Incorporated. She offers certifications in paradox management, NLP, and Ericksonian hypnosis. She has created 8 CDs, authored 3 books, presents workshops and seminars worldwide, and is an expert on human communication styles and practical spirituality. Ragini uses her skills and personal wisdom of over 35 years of exploring meditation and stress relief as it relates to living in a paradoxical world. This supports the desire to blend spiritual lives into the fabric of material lives, producing results, a sense of purpose, and more joy and inspiration from daily living. Ragini has a degree in physiological psychology, is a certified international trainer of NLP and Ericksonian hypnosis, is a certified hypnotherapist, Reiki master, and practitioner of energy psychology. She's a certified practitioner of HBLU levels 1 through 4, member of the International Hypnosis Foundation, and continues education in a variety of areas and practices beyond this. We're going to be talking tonight about her work of Unflappable, 6 Steps to Staying Happy, Centered, and Peaceful No Matter What, Human Communication and Spirituality, Creating New Neural Pathways, and Conflict Reduction. We're also going to be delving into her book, Facticity, and she also just recently released her free 3-video series called The Beggar's Secret, which is on her website. And her website is www.raginimichaels.com. That's RaginiMichaels.com. That's also at the bottom of our show description. And you'll be able to catch that from the web, from the front page right there to get into looking at also her free 3-video series. So I'm going to go ahead and get her mic opened up here. Ragini, welcome to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour.
Thank you, Jesse. It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
I greatly appreciate you giving us your time and being here and sharing your wisdom and experience, and I know you've got a lot to share with us, so I'm excited.
Totally my pleasure. I'm looking forward to it.
So what I would love to do is to start by having you give us a little bit of background. I mean, I gave a little bit there, but leading up to the work that you're doing now, for example, like, you know, who are you and how did you get into this type of work?
That's always a good question, isn't it?
It is. It's a good starting point.
Well, you told everyone sort of what my background is in, you know, real world experience. But I think the thing that led me primarily to the work that I'm now into with opposites, which you were talking about earlier, whether to harmonize or resist with the opposites that seem to permeate our life, producing, you know, those dilemmas and contradictions. I had had difficult relationships, let's put it that way, to say it nicely, and it was really primarily my fault since I was very demanding in it, but it was very disheartening. And I had started meditating and doing all kinds of energy things back in the 70s, actually, which is telling my age, but nevertheless, that's the truth. And I've done so many different kind of personal growth things and learned so many things about human psychology and human emotion. And then I started doing Vipassana meditation and did that for many years with Jack Kornfield and Joseph Goldstein, Sharon Salzberg. And then I also became somewhere in the late 70s a disciple of Osho, who at that time was known as Rajneesh. And I stayed in that field of energy until he died or left his body, which was, I believe, in 1991. And then the 20 years that followed that, which takes us up to, I guess, just about now, that's about 20 years, that energy and that understanding or that way of trying to look at life influenced me a great deal, because one of the things that he talked about a lot was learning how to be Zorba the Buddha, as he described it, which is how do you keep the love of life and, you know, and the exuberance for life and the living of it in that way balanced by the reflective depth and calm of being a Buddha. And that was fascinating to me. I was very far from either side of that, actually. I wasn't very comfortable being enthusiastic and effusive with my energy, nor was I really very good at meditation either. My mind, like most of us, was pretty fast and going a mile a minute all the time. So it seemed like it was about in 1985, whenever I was just really feeling kind of down about the whole thing. I'd been doing this for years and years and years, since the early 1970s. And, of course, I'd learned many things, and a lot of things had changed. But ultimately, I was still essentially the same person I'd always been, a little bit more aware, but not really having changed all that much in actuality. And it was kind of depressing, to be honest with you. And I went to India. I went to India many times. And the reason I'm telling this little story, which is also on my website, is because it leads directly into the work that I do. And I was in the sitting on a fence one night, or a bridge thing in India outside the ashram. And this beggar walked by me, who I saw every day when I was in India. And on this particular day, however, I really actually took a look at him. And as he walked by with his hands out in front of him begging for alms, which is very typical in India, I noticed really for the first time, with a different kind of view that I was seeing it from, that he really was a beggar, in the sense that he had tattered clothes, he had no teeth. From my perspective, he was in the lowest position that you could possibly be in, being a middle class American. You know, so it was like horrifying to look at that. And yet, this man was radiating this peace and this energy, and he had this smile on his face that on that day, and I don't know why it was that day, I looked at him and I said, you know, there is no way that I could be happy in that circumstance. No way. And I wondered, what in heaven's name is his secret? How is he doing it? And at that moment, I had a tremendous insight, which for me was life-changing. And I really asked myself, I saw that the reason why I could not do what he was doing, which was radiating love and presence and kindness in that circumstance, was because I had defined happiness as the absence of anything that made me unhappy. And as I went on to learn about what his secret was, it turned out that how I had been defining happiness in the first place was really the primary difference between that beggar and me. It was how we were looking at the circumstances we found ourselves in. And that recognition on that day took me to another, I would say, another 15, 20 years of research and exploration, both personally and psychologically, to figure out what was the answer to changing the definition of happiness. Why was I defining happiness as being rid of everything that made me unhappy, and how could I do it differently so that my actual brain would get a new neural pathway laid down in it? Because with my background in NLP and hypnosis, the question was not so much getting the idea of opposites or the idea of harmony in life and being able to accept things. The reality was I'd had that concept for years, but I wasn't able to live it. And with my background, the question became, how can we work with this idea that this man had already gotten in his being and allow ourselves to get a new neural pathway laid down in the brain? So basically what happened is because of my background in neuro-linguistic programming, which is about creating models of people who do things excellently, I created a model of the mystic psychology, because that's the one group in our human species that is able to be unflappable or happy and peaceful no matter what the circumstance is, externally or internally. So they seemed like a really good group of human beings to actually create a model of, and of course that's what my expertise was in. So my book Unflappable and my trainings and everything from that point on, it has been based on this model that is of the psychology of the mystics. And so when you look at that, you get to see what their psychology is and how the average person's is different. And then my work is to really help people learn how to shift their psychology so that it matches the psychology of the mystics in the way that's necessary for us to become more unflappable, so that whatever the circumstances, external or internal, we can remain happy and peaceful, compassionate, loving, centered, no matter what's going on. And when you lose that, you know how to come back to it very easily, very quickly. So that's the essence of my work, and that's what took me to it. My misery took me to it. And I've been working with it ever since to continue learning how to lay down that neural pathway in the brain, because without that, the most of the things that we have in the world today are pretty much ideas, and they're beautiful, but they aren't really coded into the brain into a new pattern, which is actually what's needed to create practical spirituality and heal that split that most of us experience between the spiritual life and the material life. And that's really one of my goals, is to help heal that deep split, to have people see a way to harmonize with that particular set of opposites that we all have to deal with. Simply said, being both human and divine at the same time. It's a little confusing for most of us. So anyway, that's what led me there. Was that too much, or is that okay?
No, that was great. It was really wonderful. And I think, you know, you kind of brought in some points, because I think we're going to gel a little bit later into some of those creating of new neural pathways. Mm-hmm. I think you have a exercise or something that we're going to do with that. And, you know, I look to do the same thing in my work, because I feel like we too oftentimes create this big polarization, and we say, well, I'm a human being, so I can't accept that I'm God. And mm-hmm. if I accept that I'm God, then where does that leave me as a human being? And these different big concepts, it's part of why I chose to write my work the way I wrote as well, is because I feel like people have placed these things as untangible, you know, unreachable. And
right.
They're not. They're really a part of our human existence. And they're really a part, it's all intertwined. I mean, the human existence is part of the spiritual path. And so I think that that's an important aspect.
I think it is too. I think also that one of the places that I think is important, at least in my experience, is that the more that you understand duality or opposites or the dilemmas in our daily life or the contradictions, and the more you learn how to live with them, the closer you are to actually finding the aspect of ourselves that is divine. So, because it's kind of on the other side of duality, you know, but you can't just ignore duality, because we live in it as human beings. So my work is really focusing on helping you get to the divine aspect by learning better how to recognize opposites when they're in front of us and our polarization, and how to neutralize that polarization so that you then have immediate. Actually, it really creates an immediate opening for you to connect with the higher spiritual aspects of our being.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's really great, because when we look at this work, even though we have these two different things, they still connect and they still touch. And
absolutely.
It's kind of the way relationships and a lot of things in our life, that we're individual people, but we still connect and touch.
Mm-hmm.
And
of course, part of that, again, takes us into polarity, because most of us want to touch, we want to connect, and we don't want to be in isolation or separate. So we actually start our polarization right there, because when the you know, isolation or the aloneness comes, or the disconnection, the separation, most of us scramble. You know, we're not harmonizing with that experience, as you put it, to put it in how you've frame this thing for tonight. We resist it, and we say, I don't want this. I want to change it back immediately to the opposite, right? I want the connection and the touch. And of course we do. That's natural. And yet, mm-hmm. if we're talking about expanding our consciousness and becoming more compassionate beings, my work is really about helping us to find that place in us where we can relax with both sides of the coin, because we're going to have both. There's going to be connection and there's going to be separation. And
right.
It's hard for the mind to get that, but we all know experientially that's the truth. And I find a lot of people who come to study with me or come to my office for private work truly feel that they're failing and there's something wrong with them when they can't maintain the sense of peacefulness or happiness or presence or compassion or anything. They want to maintain a state that they choose, and ignore the get the other one to be eradicated, and they think it's their fault. And of course, as you learn that it's not your fault that the other one is coming back, you know, it's not your fault that you succeed and then fail and succeed and then fail, or that you're present and then absent, or that you're compassionate and then you're angry. That's the natural flow of energy in life. That's how change happens and is maintained in a balanced way. But if you don't know that and it isn't coded into your brain, it's almost impossible to stop the polarization, because the pull to go towards what you feel is the right way to do it, the one that's more pleasurable, is incredibly strong. You know, we all know that drive for pleasure is pretty strong, and the drive to stay away from pain may even be stronger. And that's like part of what being human is. So my work is to help us deal with that, to transmute that, actually change that relationship to the opposites in such a way that you can actually harmonize with both and be at peace with either one that's there. So really then the circumstance that you're in isn't going to disturb your happiness or your centeredness or your peacefulness.
Right. And I think that it is so important. And when we think of this, you know, in a bigger scale or on a scale outside of ourselves, for example, I mean, it would be no different than saying, well, you know, Mother Nature's flawed because she doesn't provide summer and sunny days every single day of the year.
Right.
And mm-hmm. we need each one of those systems or each one of those seasons to restore different things on Earth. You know, if we didn't have a rainy season or rainy days or snowy days, we wouldn't be able to replenish our water tables and things like this. So it definitely is, I think, you know, finding that harmony, that balance, seeing that, hey, it's okay to have some of this other peace out there. Now,
yeah, and I think, you know, two of the most fundamental things that I think you're relating to, you're speaking to in your examples, which are very good, by the way, is the fact that, you know, even before duality or opposites come, there is impermanence. You know, everything is going to change, and it does change because what we have to have is balance. You know, that's like all living systems have as their prime directive, balance. You've got to find homeostasis. And when you bring those two notions in and you realize that that's part of what opposites are helping to accomplish, they're helping to accomplish the balance that's needed, you know, for life to happen. Because most of us think, you know, life at its best would be without tension. It's just pure relaxation. But in reality, life is the tension between polar opposites. You know, life doesn't exist without the tension. And that's a major change right there for most of us to start to get our heads around, that tension is the way of life, you know. And you can either relax with it or you can resist it. And funny thing is when you relax with the tension, then you're relaxed. It's
right.
Not tense anymore, even though it is tense. I mean, it's a paradox. That's why my work is called paradox. Logically, you can't have tension and relaxation at the same time. But existentially, of course, you can, and we experience it, you know.
And it is. I do like your terms, which you bring that up quite frequently in your book, Unflappable, 6 Steps to Staying Happy, Centered, Peaceful, No Matter What, that it's really all about paradox. And, you know, I think that is just – I had a chance to read your book, by the way, and I was – when I first started out, I was like, okay, I think I've heard some of this. And then as I kind of delved into it, I was like, oh, well, now there's a good concept to think about, and there's another piece to think about. And you really get into, you know, dealing with that polarity in our lives, which I think is so important. Now, I want to start delving into your work more here tonight. And because what you deal with is not only something that many people have happening on a personal or internal level, but is also showing up on a global scale through things that we see happening around the world. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we create these polarities all the time, consciously, unconsciously, and we see it in the events of the world. You know, we see it through the wars. We see it through people standing up and trying to protect nature and get rid of GMO. And so we've got all of these polarities that are flowing around in there. So if we start with your work being unflappable, can you give us a little more insight to your concept of paradox? I mean, we've touched on it.
Well, let's look at it this way. I have a little exercise for you to do, if that's okay, right?
Okay.
Which I think speaks to what you're asking me about here. If you just write down a couple things, and anybody who's listening do the same, because this would be helpful here, and just write down, you know, maybe four or five things that you want, something you want in your life. Could be wealth, could be together, you know, having a relationship, being together with someone, you know, anything you want. Just write down something that you want. Now, if you want something, if you want something like a new couch, ask yourself what would having the new couch bring you. Okay, well, it might be because a couch doesn't really have an opposite. But I see some things coming up in the room there. So happiness, comfort, you know, something like that. Because a couch, and the same as with money. You know, money is what would money bring you. All right, so that's what we're wanting to look at. So if you could make a list of like maybe three or four things that you want, Jesse, and then if you could just read it to people, if you don't mind, is that okay? Would you be willing to share that with the folks listening?
Yeah, I could do that. So I would say one of those things, well, money representing peace, I think,
okay.
For me.
Okay.
And I would say stability.
Okay.
And I would say success.
Okay. One more.
And love.
Okay. Fantastic. Very reasonable things to want. Yeah, I mean, I want all those too. So now what I want you to do is write down next to each of those the opposite of that. So what for you would be the opposite of peace?
So the opposite of peace for me would be stress, anxiety.
Okay. And the opposite of stability?
Insecurity.
Okay. And the opposite of success?
Failure.
And the opposite of love?
Hate.
Okay. Now, if everybody who's listening, yes, I see people who are doing that. That's great. Happiness, sadness, comfortable, uncomfortable. Okay, now the thing is to say out loud for each one, I'm going to do the first one for you. In order to have peace, I must also allow stress and anxiety. This is the sentence. In order to have what I want, I must also allow what I don't want. Because I'm assuming if you look at that list, that because what you want is on the right, on the left, on one side, what you wrote down as the opposite is what you don't want in your body.
Okay.
Now, in your mind, you might say, well, sure, I can handle stress and anxiety and insecurity and failure and hate. But the body's going, I don't want that, generally speaking.
That's right, because that's my first reaction is, no, I don't want the stress and the anxiety.
Yeah. So this is that simple. So go ahead and say the sentence and see how that affects you as you do all four of them. It's in order to have the first one, I must allow the second one, okay?
Okay, and in order to have peace, I have to allow stress and anxiety. In order to have stability, I have to allow insecurity. In order to have success, I have to allow failure. In order to have love, I have to allow hate.
Now, if that's true, if the law of polarities is true and we live in a dualistic universe, then what you just said is the way to harmonize with the two of those, right? And you would have to come to the place in your body where you would say, I can allow both peace and stress and anxiety. I can allow both stability and insecurity. That's our goal. That's not where we start off, but that's the goal that we're looking at. just so, and you can see maybe a large part of a person doesn't want that. You go, what? What? Accept stress and anxiety and insecurity and failure and hate as a part of my life? You know, that's our first response to that is usually going to be, no, I don't want to do that. But the reality is if you look at your situation, then if that's really the way it is, and I'm not suggesting that you take my word for it, what I suggest people do in the beginning is start to really notice how much their life is filled with this kind of movement towards what they want and away from what they don't want, and how that is usually set up as a polarity, okay? And the my book and the work, The Psychology of the Mystics, was based on a basic guideline. This is the beggar's secret, if you go to watch the videos, the free videos for you, part of the core of the beggar's secret is this. If you set up what you like against what you don't like, you create immense suffering in your mind. Right? And the reason why, of course, is because in a dualistic world where opposites are the fabric of our lives, and this is what most people don't see. And my work right now, frustrating as it is to help people see that this fabric of life is created by the tension between opposites. So in a way, we live in a sea of polarities, and we don't really realize it. So if you looked at a fish swimming in the sea, and he said, "I don't know what water is," you'd think he was nuts, right? Because he's in it. So, but nevertheless, we're sort of in that situation because we really don't yet get that we actually live every day in a sea of opposites. And this dynamic is going on where we want, as you said, peace and not stress and anxiety, stability and not insecurity. Other people have put stuff up on the thing here I see. Somebody wants joy in relationship and doesn't want sorrow. Embrace joy and suffer through sadness is the opposite. Health, pain, student, teacher. He's got a lot of different things coming up there. And, you know, you automatically want, I mean, check it out for yourself. Don't you automatically want one and not the other? And you have to stay out of your head here because you can really, you can convince yourself that you're already at peace with both. But you have to look to your body to see if that's true. If you remain centered and calm, it's not a set of polar opposites that's a problem for you. But if you're not, if as you said, your first reaction was, "I don't want stress and anxiety," then you know that your unconscious mind is polarized towards peace and away from stress and anxiety. So this is the first thing, just starting to see how much we live in a world of opposites and contradictions. And you know, you started off your show today with the Great Escape. And from the mystical viewpoint, the great escape is from the perception of duality as something that you have to choose between. Because until we become aware of it, we remain in a certain kind of prison. And right now, we don't even know that we're in it because we're not that aware of polar opposites as having any real relevance to our daily lives. And I'm saying it makes up the fabric of our daily lives. So was that helpful to you to look at that little thing, and what kind of impact did that have on you, Jesse, just to do that little exercise?
Well, and I think, you know, there's some things where I can say, okay, I'm comfortable with some of these, and then there's other ones where all my buttons go off because I think, no, I don't want to be poor. I don't want to be stressed and things like this. And I think part of the natural thing, too, is there's so much out there, and of course, you know, we have to look at each concept in the perspective of the concept. But there's so much stuff out there that says, if you think about the poverty stuff, if you think about the stress stuff, if you accept that, if you allow that in, then you're going to magnify that and you're going to draw it. So I think there is this kind of programming there that says, you know, I can't accept these things.
It's true. I mean, that's, from my perspective, one downside of the New Age thinking is that it really amplified the idea that you were to be positive and not negative. Now, let me, you know, throw something out there that it is good to be positive and not negative. All right? So this is a paradox. It's good to be positive and not negative. But, right, if you're anti being negative, right, if your intention is to avoid negativity and exit out of your life forever, you are going for a goal you will never reach. And that's different than realizing you have positive thoughts and negative thoughts, and they both will arise. And you can choose which one to give your energy to, but you can do it without being for or against either one. And I know that that's paradoxical. This does not make logical sense, but that's what paradox is. It doesn't make logical sense, but existentially in your body, you can get rid of your avoidance of stress and anxiety, for example, and you can then, when you're in stress, you can accept it and you can learn what it has to tell you. Because part of what happens when you go, when you move away from the negative and you refuse to go toward it because you're afraid you're going to draw it to you, or you do draw it to you, one way or the other, however you look at it, if you're avoiding the negative, you are avoiding the learnings that it has for you. And that's the value of looking at your discontent. That's the value of going into the negative side of your thoughts and your emotions. Because once you have the learning, you naturally go to the positive. It's not like you have to make a choice. That's part of what this work is about. There's a rhythm between opposites that is life's rhythm. And if we can learn to ride that rhythm, okay, it's like surfing, you know. You don't tell the wave what size wave to be, right?
Right.
You get on your board, you know, you don't say to the ocean, okay, I only want a little wave, no big waves, or I only want big waves, no little ones. No. You go out, you get on your board, you find the right position, and you get in the right headspace, and you position everything just perfectly, and then you can navigate that wave whether it's small or big. Doesn't matter. So whatever comes, you'll be able to handle. Right? So you have to not be afraid of the negative. But on the other hand, you ultimately want to be more positive than negative. And here's why. If you want to get to the place that's beyond the mind, which your songs that you used at the beginning of your show were indicating, there's a place beyond the mind where more peace rests, it's too big a jump to go from a negative mind to outside of your mind. So the need to go from a negative mind to a positive mind is there. Because from a positive mind, it's much easier to step to the side of your mind, to step out of it. And that's very helpful. On the other hand, okay, because there's always two sides to the coin, you want to be able to be present to your negativity when it's there without pulling away from it, out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to say, here's negativity. Okay, what's that about? Now let me go to the positive. That make sense?
It does make sense. And
I mean, it's not logical sense, but because it's paradoxical. How can you be how can you be for and against negativity at the same time? And yet that's kind of the way it is. And my work, the six steps, you know, that you learn in the process of the book and the training that I do, shows you exactly how to manage that in your mind.
Well, and I think that you definitely, too, bring up some aspects of, you know, the world doesn't have to be black and white. You've got polarities, you've got paradoxes, but the world doesn't have to be black or white, as you say. You don't have to have this or that.
Right. It's a lot easier if you live with the grays. If you say life is both this and that, it's much, much, much easier because it's closer to reality.
It really
reality
is.
Reality is black and white, right?
Even if we look at the concept of, for example, merging with the divine, which is a big thing, right? We're spiritually trying to merge to the divine space. That the divine encompasses everything. Creation encompasses everything. It doesn't have just day or just night. It's not a matter of choosing one or the other. You're getting all of it. And
right. And if you don't know how to expand your consciousness to embrace polarities, which is a first step, merging with God is going to be tough. because, you know, we've got these polarities right here. You know, we have to become bigger than them.
Yes, absolutely. We want to step beyond them. And when you look at, when you find those polarities that where we're really resisting, where those buttons are going off, there really is a lesson there for us to gain. There's something there that we might not be seeing. We need to expand that consciousness to grab it. And at the same time, in the process of letting ourselves go through that struggle, we will get the consciousness. So there's that paradox.
Yeah, it is. Because you get something very positive out of embracing your negativity. If you can embrace it from a place of openness rather than, you know, like, let me go back to surfing for a moment. If you know how to surf, you can stay so that the wave does not drown you, right? You don't get all that wet, right? you can surf on the wave or even in it, you know, like a tube thing, and you don't get doused by the water, okay? So if you can do that, that's what we want to do. You want to be able to embrace your negativity like a surfer embraces the waves in the sea. You know how to ride it. You can get what you need from it. On the other hand, if you lose your balance, you get sucked into the water, and now you're just being tumbled around by the wave. So if I have anger arise, if I can ride that and have some distance from it and let it be there so I can inquire into it, that's very different than losing my distance and suddenly I become my anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just tossed around like a wave where I've lost my balance in the ocean and that's it.
Right. And I think that's such a great example that you're using there. That getting tossed around, that, you know, losing your balance on the board, and it is just about finding that balance point, really, as you move through life, and not looking at it and saying, oh well, you know, I've got to have all the good stuff, or I've got to have just the big waves or just the small waves. You know, sometimes you need those small waves to give yourself a little rest from the bigger waves, which take a lot of energy, and the big waves might be fun, but they take a lot of energy too sometimes. And so having those smaller waves gives you a chance to catch your breath, relax a little bit.
I want to make a comment if I can. I see somebody has written a note here about embracing a wife beater. You can't embrace, because abuse is a negative, but you can't embrace it. Abuse is a negativity. Let me just comment that on things like that, okay, we're not talking about accepting a negative situation in your life that is harmful to you or to anyone else. Not in the sense of allowing it to continue, but we're talking about embracing a circumstance as what is without making it good or bad, okay, in the sense of a moralistic thing. It's just what is, all right? But if somebody is beating there, if you're the one being beaten, all right, you better get the hell out of there. Because that would be the thing to do to take care of yourself. And again, it's a paradox, right? And the point is not to. This is not about changing other people. This is about changing yourself. And when you change your own perspective on something, it changes the relationship that you have with other people. But if you're with someone who is not interested in change, who is so lost in their own problems, you know, that isn't going to work. So those are situations where you don't want to use this kind of work. This kind of work is not for that. First thing you want to do is get out of an abusive situation. Then when you've got some stability again in your life, come back and look at this work. This work is not the answer to everything. There's a lot of work people have to do before working with paradox and dualities is going to be that useful. Okay?
Right.
Because there's a lot of things in life you have to learn to walk away from. But once you've walked away from a lot of things, then you realize, you know, and you've got your own stability and nobody's abusing you verbally or emotionally or any kind of way, then you go, okay, now that I'm out of that situation, who am I today? Now that I'm no longer, I have good boundaries and nobody, I'm not allowing people to abuse me anymore. And that's maybe when this kind of work comes into play, right? So I'm not saying that this is something you use in every single circumstance of your life. Just to make that clear, because I don't want people to misunderstand what I'm saying.
And I'm glad that you clarified that, because, yes, certainly that's never a situation that we want to remain in. And yet, in some ways, there are those lessons there, because a lot of times people that are feeling stuck in that situation have fear about stepping out on their own. They're resisting that polarity of being alone.
Right.
In there. And so,
you have to work your way out of the deep traumatic events that you have until, you know, before you're really ready to work with changing your life from a spiritual perspective. You know, I mean, spirituality helps definitely to get us out of those situations, but you have to get out of them, right? You can't stay in them, because they take your energy away from being able to step back from your life. They're very dramatic. They're very filled with drama. I think most people who go a little bit deeper into spirituality really find life has a lot less drama in it. There's a lot less drama, because you're fighting less with what's going on around you, and you're putting yourself in situations where there is less drama. By that, I mean people fighting between polar opposites.
Right.
Like, I mean, abusive relationship is somebody wants to be dominant and somebody wants to be submissive. You know, it's very codependent. It has, you know, it's a very psychological issue, right? And you're not going to be able to use this work on that until you've gotten some distance from it.
Yeah, and I think that that's a great point, and something to, you know, definitely for people to keep in mind, that there is a lot of work. And of course, Angel Love in the chat room was mentioning, you know, abuse women are always alone. So, there's so many different little pieces when we start getting into all of those things, and, you know, coming into, you know, teaching us to love ourselves, as Kevin's pointing out, and things, and learning to definitely find those other aspects. And I know that Kevin asked a question too back here a little bit before he made that statement, and I was going to jump back to it. Okay, and it was, does the negativity come from an early programming?
It's a very good question, actually. And if you're looking at it from a psychological perspective, you would pretty much say that a lot of negativity comes from programming, from how you're raised and the environment you're raised in. So I think we have to say what perspective we're looking at it from. If we look at negativity psychologically and emotionally, a lot of it definitely comes in childhood, most of it. But there's also just negativity in life, you know, and negativity is not negative as far as life is concerned. It's just the opposite of positive. And that's hard to see in the beginning until you get enough balance in yourself psychologically and emotionally, because for a long time our focus is on healing the negative traumas that we've had in being raised in an environment that is not particularly showing us divine love. Nothing against our parents or anything, but most of us don't have that to give to our children, because we didn't get it from our parents, and it goes on and on and on, generation after generation. So I think you have to. I think it's clear that psychologically and emotionally, negativity does come from childhood, a lot of it, and our culture as well. Spiritually speaking, however, in a dualistic universe, positive and negative are just two sides of the same coin, and they both have strengths and they both have weaknesses. So the trick is to realize what the strengths and weaknesses are of both sides in any situation. And then you find what is the place in the middle. The Buddhists talk about the middle way, and I'm going to talk about, you know, what's the truth that both of them have, you know, what's the place where they blend together in the middle. And that's a lot of what my work is helping, giving people some tools to help them actually be able to do that, to find that. So I think it was a good question, but I think you have to answer it from several different levels.
I definitely agreed, and I think we could get very in-depth with all of that. And kind of touching on some of the other questions that Kevin had in there, kind of ties in with a question I have and ties in with where you just brought in how to tie all of this together. How is, for example, discontent valuable to us? And why is discontent wise?
Well, those are really excellent questions. I don't think any of us have to argue about the fact that we are all discontent. I mean, even Buddha said, you know, life is basically unsatisfactory. Now, that's a hard thing to come to peace with, to say that life is basically unsatisfactory. But the key to why it's unsatisfactory is because everything always changes, and we want things to stay the same. On the other hand, if things stay the same too long, we get bored, we want something new, and we get discontented, and we want something to change. So we go back, and if things change too much, then we get scared, and we want things to stay the same. We want them to slow down. So the reality is that the discontent from the model that I'm working with, from the mystical perspective, the discontent is what tells us where we are to go next. It will say to you, you're out of balance. Most discontent's message is, you're out of balance and you need to look at what the other side can bring to you, because that is what you need to balance. So if I'm feeling alone and I'm discontented with my aloneness, just to give it some context here, then what my discontent is essentially saying to me, it's a signal to me that what I need is the opposite of aloneness, and that will satisfy my discontent. I am now longing for the opposite of aloneness. Aloneness needs the opposite of togetherness in order to complete itself. So this is an important point. Just stay with alone and together. Those two things define each other. Okay, aloneness is defined, or being alone is defined by not being together. Togetherness is absent. And togetherness is defined by the absence of being alone. And so they're like, you know, they're like Romeo and Juliet, you know, they're never going to part, ever, ever, ever. You know, they're like a completely codependent couple, right? It's going to go on forever and ever, the married couple that's been together for lifetimes, right? You are never going to be able to separate alone and together, because they yearn for each other. They yearn because their completion lies in the other. And there's a rhythm here that we can find as human beings. We can find that rhythm. And then the discontent becomes a signal to us that we are out of balance. And all things that are living need to come to balance again and again and again. You know, if you just look at your body right now, if you stood up wherever you are and you watched your body for a moment, and I said to you, please stand completely still, no movement at all. Don't move your chest. Don't move your body even the slightest degree, side to side or front to back. You know you can't do it, right? Because the body moves. It's a movement. And if you say, I just want to be, you know, leaning to the left, eventually your muscles and your body is going to start to cramp and you're going to long to move to the right. So there's a discontent holds our longing for the completion of the cycle, and that's what brings us to balance. So is that a long answer? But there you go. From this point of view.
Yeah, and that, you know, I think that's a good example is that the discontent does help give us some of that motivation to strive for the other part. You know, it's looking for peace in a way.
Yeah, and I think, Jesse, too, part of what we're just inundated with it. Get rid of the discontent. Get rid of it. Get rid of your negativity. Get rid of the discontent. Get rid of poverty. Get rid of everything else. And if you want to get rid of it, you have to embrace it. That's the paradox.
Mm-hmm.
So the message that we're getting a lot of times is not a useful message, because it's not getting us to the outcome we want. You know, if you want misery or poverty or aloneness to no longer be a major issue for you, the way to do it, paradoxically, is to embrace it and understand the role that it's playing in creating balance, and that it's not a statement. It doesn't have anything to do with who you are. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Right.
It's just it's the rhythm of life and the tension between opposites. It's really very simple, but it's very hard to see. You know, it's very hard to see. But if you look at your own life, you can see it. And you can see that no matter how long... I mean, I was in relationship for 20-some-odd years, you know. 26 years I was in two relationships. Mostly, I mean, it had its good times, too, but mostly it was pretty hellish because I kept demanding that the other person make me happy. I mean, you know, you can't have a relationship like that, right?
Right.
And, of course, I was blaming the other person for my unhappiness. On the day that I woke up and realized that there was polarities going on here and I was pushing off certain things and making my partner carry them for me, then when I took them back and I started looking at opposites, you know, alone and together was a primary one for me, then it became much easier to be in relationship. I wasn't making him create togetherness for me as a 100% of the time reality. That was up to me.
Right, right. And so when we're putting those things on other people, you've got to make me happy, you've got to do this for me, you know, really what we're doing is kind of disowning that polarity or that paradox.
Right.
We're resisting it. Is what we're doing. We're trying to ignore it, resist it, put it someplace else, instead of saying, well, certainly I couldn't be responsible for giving that to myself. And that's exactly
right,
what
right.
we
Right, right. And it's hard to see, you know, until you see it. That's the funny thing about us as human beings. It's hard to see something until you see it, and once you see it, you can't not see it anymore, if you're lucky anyway. You know, another little exercise that might be helpful is you put both of your hands in front of you. I know you're on a phone, so you probably can't. But if you imagine you could put your two hands in front of you and you put a polar pair there, you put one in each hand, something you have trouble with, like you said, peace and stress and anxiety before. So you could put peace in one hand and stress and anxiety in the other hand. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, and then imagine that you take, and you can feel in your body how you feel about those two, right? I mean, one might be heavier or lighter than the other. You might have an image that appears in the hand that, you know, one is pleasurable, one's not pleasurable. There could be any way that you represent those things in your two hands. But I want you to take the one that you're most pulled to, which I think you said was peace, right?
Yeah.
And I want you to leave that in front of you and put the other hand that had stress and anxiety behind your back. Take it out of the picture completely.
Okay.
Now, just imagine that this was where you were going to be forever. I don't know what your concept of peace is, but it's pretty flatlined in many ways. Yeah?
Okay.
How does that feel to think that that is where you have to stay forever? You have to now because it's all there is.
That all I can do is stay in peace?
Yeah, that's all you can do. It's permanent. Never going to go away. How does that feel? I mean, you never get to get excited again. Peace is peace, right? You're at peace.
Right, so I don't get to experience anything else but peace.
Nothing that's the opposite of peace. Anything that would disturb peace is no longer part of your life, because in a way that's kind of what we're saying, you know, when we say we want one and not the other. So this is just to see this is what it would be if you were able to get what you had thought you might want it, which is peace and no stress and anxiety. How does that feel?
Well, I think my logical mind is going, you know, peace sounds pretty good.
And what about the rest of you?
And then there's the other part of me that says, well, you know, some stress helps with growth for me.
Uh-huh.
So I guess it kind of comes down to then, I don't know, I think I still have a little, you know, this aspect of just not, you know, it's kind of like, okay, if I could have stress be my way,
huh?
you know, if stress could be a useful thing for me versus feeling like it's tearing me down and draining me out, yeah.
Okay. So basically then you're saying you're not sure there's any positive benefit to stress.
Yeah, in a sense, I think there's that, you know, my logical mind is saying there's no benefit to stress. Now, I think, you know, stress, of course, can be a favorable thing because it can push us, it can motivate us, it can,
right,
you know, help us move out of stagnation, which
right,
we can't ever.
Right, because isn't that kind of what happens if peace stays around too long? We kind of start to get stagnant and complacent.
Right.
So then
right.
You kind of want something that's going to make you move again. And that would be what you're talking about, the positive aspects of stress. So there is something positive to it, if you look at it closely, yes?
Yes, there's definitely positive things to stress, so I can see that. So I think my mind, probably like a lot of people, it gets locked on to that factor of just associating stress only with all this tension and negativity.
Right, and that's what makes us polarized. So in this particular one, what you would see is that you are a little polarized towards peace and away from stress. So that means there's not balance there. You're not able to harmonize when the stress comes. Right? But now that you see there's a benefit to stress, that already starts to change it. Because, yes, it has a downside, but the other thing that's important is to see that peace has a downside. Okay?
And
stress
I
has
think,
an upside, but peace has a downside, if it's permanent.
And I think that's the key point right there, is realizing that thing that we view as so positive, if that's all we had, would have its downside, and realizing what that downside would be.
Yes.
If we had about that.
Yes. So that's all our little conversation was doing here, was helping you see there was a downside to peace. If that's
okay.
if you could stay there, which is what we all want. We think we want to stay in one place. I'd rather have everything beautiful than ugly, and I'd rather be rich than poor, and I'd rather be intelligent than stupid. I mean, who wouldn't, right? I mean, we're human. But the reality is we don't get to stay in those one places, and unless we see that it has a downside, if it could become permanent, then we won't be willing to release it. Okay, and go to the other side and get the benefits of stress and anxiety in this case, okay, which is motivation and movement. You can think, it opens things up, you know. But if you stay there too long, it wrecks your body, right?
Right.
And then you need peace again. So see, they work together. They really do. Peace and you call it stress and anxiety. Other people might use different words as the opposite. But the reality is here is that they both have something, you know, for you. So let's just finish the exercise here. Can you put the hand that has peace behind your back and put the hand that you put in stress and anxiety in front of you? So now you've taken peace out of your life, and the only thing we're going to imagine that you can ever have, this is permanent, this is the permanent fear that you're going to have stress and anxiety forever.
Yeah, I don't like that feeling.
Yeah, it's easy to see on that side, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean,
we're looking at is the polarization that's here in our bodies and in our minds. You know, we want the one that we want that's positive, and we want to get rid of the other. That's the key thing to start becoming aware of, and that's what my work helps you become conscious of and helps you shift at the unconscious level as well as the conscious level. And then starts to get it into your brain by laying down a new neural pathway in the brain that says instead of going it's either peace or stress or anxiety, the new neural pathway says let's make life both peace and stress and anxiety. And let's get the benefits of both. And as soon as the weaknesses come up, that's going to be discontent, and that's going to signal me to go over to the other side and find my balance again.
And that's going to create the harmony that you were talking about.
Right. Right. And I think that's an important thing. Kevin had typed something in the chat room there. There is peace in solitude. He had his question there. And absolutely. I mean, I know I find a lot of peacefulness in solitude. I'm one of those people that I actually have to push myself a little bit more. As much as I love people and certainly can enjoy my time, I've been a solitude person a lot of my life and enjoy that peacefulness of being on my own. So, yeah, definitely I think there's that peacefulness to be found. Now, and Esther typed in, so nothing is right and nothing is wrong is what you mean?
Yes, I mean that, and don't take me wrong, okay? Because at one level, there are things that are right and there are things that are wrong. For example, if you want to have a job, you don't go. It's wrong to go in and yell at your boss and tell him that you think he's an idiot, right? That's not going to work. So you don't want to do that because that's a certain context where there are rules that you want to follow. And it, from a bigger picture, you know, it really doesn't matter. I mean, not much matters from a bigger picture because we're only here for a short journey and then we go someplace else, right? So, but the thing here is that if you say something is right and wrong, what you are going to do is start polarizing to the right and avoiding the wrong. And there's enormous lessons in being wrong. So if you can open up to when you make a mistake, you know, when you do something that doesn't work, if you call it wrong and you say, I didn't do it right, you will have a tendency to miss the learning that was there for you in the wrong thing that you did. Okay? So that's one of the places where right and wrong isn't all that useful if you're doing inquiry on the inside. But there are rules and regulations in the world that it's useful to follow, or there are consequences. Right? Basically, you know, it's better. You know, the Buddhists talk about skillful and unskillful, which is a step, it's an easier place to live from than right and wrong. There's things that are skillful because they work and things that are unskillful because they don't. Right and wrong is very moralistic, and it makes most of us feel, you know, like if we do something wrong, there's no recovering from it, and it means that there's something horrible about who we are, which is never the case from a spiritual perspective. Okay, you've got to remember that what we're...
Work,
go ahead.
I know in my work, when we get into the right-wrong aspects, what we're doing is putting a judgment on the situation. And this is one thing that happens, for example, with your work with the polarities. When we're in these heavy polarities and we're grabbing, whether it's one side or the other, we're making judgments. And when we release those judgments, then we can see the situation for what it really is.
Right, and you know, every situation has everybody's viewpoint, and there you can't really tell what actually happened because everybody has their own perception of what occurred. So you really don't know, you know, what actually occurred. You can only know that one person saw it this way, another person saw it that way. And, you know, you were talking about diversity earlier and having five people in your company. If you could have five people have allowed to have their own perception of a scenario, and those perceptions were radically different, then it would be a much richer conversation if people were just sharing their perspectives and no one was saying mine's right and yours is wrong. But it takes a while to be able to get to that place where you can allow other people their viewpoint that is the polar opposite of yours without making them wrong and you right, because now you've polarized again. You've closed yourself off from compassion. You've closed yourself off from forgiveness. So right and wrong, you know, it's not just that useful a concept at higher levels, okay? For external world navigation, very useful. You know, for teaching your kids, it's very useful. They have to know right from wrong.
Well, and when we think about it, we all have those so-called strengths and weaknesses or things that challenge us, and you know, if we can bring somebody else into our life, like if we're going to be in a relationship, for example, you know, sometimes you you do better with somebody who's similar to you because they're flowing at the same time through the same things. But on the other hand, it can be really, really nice to have somebody who functions differently than you, because then where you're strong, they might be weak and vice versa. So you actually balance each other out very well because, you know, there's always a strong person. You know, there's always somebody standing in that strength.
Let me give you an example. This is a little story. It's in my book, but it's about a couple who came to see me, and he was a fireman, and she was a high school counselor. And they were very much in love with each other, and they had a fairly good relationship, except when it came to money. And that's why they came to see me, because they argued about it really passionately, and they, you know, it just about was destroying their relationship. And he was of the mind that risk was what it was all about, right? You should live with totality and just jump in and take the risk. Now, he's a fireman, so you can imagine that that would be reasonable from his point of view, right? So he wanted to take their money and invest it in, what do you call the trading, you know, trading commodities and other kinds of things which had high risk factors on them. And, of course, he lost a lot of money, and they were in a lot of debt and all that kind of stuff and getting in trouble. And she, on the other hand, was a very lovely woman, and she was highly into security. But she didn't want to be the one who had to provide the security. She wanted her husband to do it for her. But she was very, very upset whenever he would take the money and put it into something so risky. And he thought that if you were going to just put money like she wanted to do in like mutual funds or into a savings account or something like that, it was just stupid. You know, that was just, you weren't going to get anything back on your return, and that was, safety was dumb, you know. And they were just completely polarized. There was no middle ground anymore. So when they came to see me, I taught them the six-step process that's in the book and showed them, and they saw that there was, in the context of finances, there was value to taking risks and there was value to looking towards security. But if you focused on either one to the exclusion of the other, you got a lot of problems, which is what they were having. So they learned how finances benefited by both risk-taking and looking at security. So what happened in the context of their work with me is they came to understand that the other's point of view was valid. It was valid and it had value, and that their own point of view had some weaknesses in it. Okay, which they hadn't seen before. They hadn't seen the weaknesses in their own point of view, and they hadn't seen the value in their partner's point of view. And that's what they learned by coming and doing this process, that finances, and that was the context, was much better handled if they brought some element of risk and some element of security to it so that they could balance the two out. So, I mean, that's just an example. I hope it was a good one to show how you can take an extreme polarization can ruin a relationship. And when you start to understand there are benefits and weaknesses to both in the context that you're arguing over, it can just change everything, and you can start to, you know, function again as a loving couple, for example.
Absolutely. And that is a really key point. And I think when we can get to that point where we say, great, you're able to provide this in the relationship and do this, and I honor that in you, and I respect that, but I also need to have my way of doing things as well, and there's value there as well. You know, we look at that. It's, you know, if you're in a stable 9-to-5 job, I mean, it's a huge asset to getting that regular paycheck and knowing what you're going to earn every month and things like that. But it's the same amount of limitation there because your salary is going to be capped, you know. But then, you know, you can say, well, you know, great, you can jump in there and be employed. And, you know, your salary is not capped. It's up to you. You have this, you know, huge earning potential. However, you don't have that security of knowing what you're going to get from month to month in there.
Right.
So there are, kind of comes down to there's pros and cons, so to say, no matter what side you're in. So let me ask you this, because I know this will hopefully maybe sum up several things here, stepping out of some of these things. Somebody who is stuck, and I think there's a lot of people in this position today, and we're even seeing it on a bigger global economy level, they're stuck in, I don't have enough, I'm poor, and so I don't have that security, I don't have that peace of mind, and I can't seem to get out of that polarity.
In your thinking, you mean?
Yeah, how does somebody maneuver that they're stuck in that polarity that they don't want to be in?
Well, the first thing that you have to realize is your thinking. You know, if you put your energy into I'm poor, I'm poor, I'm poor, I don't have enough money, then you are essentially creating your way of perceiving life. That is your way of perceiving what's happening. Right? Now, a lot of people in that situation, one of the most powerful things that they can do is start focusing on what they have, which is that magnificent, you know, wonderful thing called gratitude, right? And that changes the way you're relating to your current circumstance. It's like the beggar on the street that I talked about in the beginning. The way he was looking at the situation wasn't at what he didn't have. He was looking at what he did have, right? And in that context, when you're looking at poverty and wealth, you then, by looking at what you have, you're shifting your focus to wealth. And even though you don't have physically the money yet, right, just doing that much will help you start to change the energy around you and the way you're looking at things, because, I mean, wealth, abundance doesn't come to someone who only sees what they don't have.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way unless you want to go out and do manipulating people and everything else, you know, because you can get money that way. I'm not saying you can't. But if you have a little bit of integrity or you don't want to do it that way, then you have to change the way you're relating to it. And so, you know, I'm not a wealthy person, and it's been difficult for me to really develop the skill to start looking at what I have. You know, my personality structure is one that always sees what I don't have first. You know, if I walk into a garden, a rose garden, I'm going to notice the thorns before I notice the beautiful roses. That's my personality structure. It's annoying, but it's the way it is. So it's been difficult for me to learn how to go, wait a minute, let me look at what I have. So rather than rejecting the fact that I see thorns first or what I don't have, I accept it and then immediately follow it up with a thought or a statement about what I have. So you're balancing it out, you know, because there's truth. I don't have X, but I do have Y. You know, so in the context of polarities, in that kind of a situation, and you know, you've had stories, I'm sure, your whole life of the people who are really poor but have such faith and are always positive and telling you, they're always finding the positive gem in the hideous situation, right? And in a way, we're talking about developing that capacity. But now, because there's so much about manifestation out in the world, it's easier for people to see that it has an impact and can actually change your financial state, for example. But you can't change your financial state if you're only saying, I'm a poor person. It just doesn't happen very often.
Does that help? It helps. And the other thing I would encourage in regards to your concept of the paradoxes is, even though consciously your mind is saying, of course I don't want to be poor, of course I don't want to be without money, blah, 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 but what is it about being poor that's appealing to you? Because there's got to be something in being poor that's appealing, whether that is an ability to get attention, whether somewhere in your mind you're associating that with humbleness or sainthoodness or whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you can figure out what that is, then you will have gotten the learning out of that scenario and your situation would probably shift.
Right. And then you'd be able to let go of it, because somewhere there's something about it that's got to be appealing for you to remain in that space. And I'm not saying that we don't have bad circumstances happen to us, because certainly there are, but realizing that there's something there that we're hanging on to just as much as we would hang on to something good.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a very important thing to look at. I mean, life is really about learning. I mean, we all kind of really know that. We forget it, however, because we get busy trying to control what's happening. And I go back to the waves in the ocean again. You just can't control it. And any surfer who sits there and thinks they're going to be able to control the waves that arise out of the ocean is just, you know, they're going to fail again and again and again. And so, you know, you can't do that. That this just isn't possible in life to be able to determine that. So it's better to learn how to surf the waves, you know, and understand how they function as best you can. And that's really all I'm focusing on, is trying to help people understand opposites, because they are just everywhere all day long. You know, I mean, I think one thing that might help anybody listening is if you have a tug of war on the inside, where you're using terms like, on the one hand, I feel this way, but on the other hand, I feel that way, or I'm of two minds, you know, part of me says this and part of me says that, you are looking right in the face of opposites, you know, and that's, you know, 100 times a day, people stop and have to make a decision between two things that feel opposite to each other. So just to start paying attention to that can be very eye-opening, and it can be very helpful to release the stress and anxiety that we all have so much of in today's world. There's so much we have to deal with.
I agree, and realizing it's not always about choosing one or the other. Again, it's about, you know, how are you going to maneuver through a given situation
right.
with it? Well, you know, ironically, the time has just flown. And I didn't even probably ask, you know, but a third or a quarter of, you know, what I could have asked here tonight with your work. There's so many great things there. And certainly I want to mention again that you've got great books here, you've got great books out. Certainly we've been talking about concepts related to what you discuss in Facticity, as well as Unflappable, 6 Steps to Staying Happy, Centered, Peaceful No Matter What. Also, there is these principles within your 3 video series, The Beggar's Secret, which is, people just go on your website for that, www.rawgenny.michaels.com, and right on the front page they can click, and that will take them into the page to get those free videos.
Right, they can also just type in www.thebeggarssecret.com and they'll get there as well.
Okay, perfect. So that's another option there. So, I mean, you've shared so much with us. And I'm sitting there, I'm looking at the clock going, wow, has it been that? It's just gone like that.
We like to talk. It was fun.
Definitely fun. So anything else that you would like to share in wrapping up tonight in regards to your work? Certainly they can click the links on your website for your books and things like that.
Well, you know, yeah, just one thing. I think that Nisargadatta, who's an Eastern mystic who's no longer in the body, one of his sayings is one of my favorite ones. It says, love tells me I am everything. Wisdom tells me I am nothing. Between these two, my life flows. And I just love that, because I think we all want to be somebody, and we all know that we're nothing. We're struggling with our magnificence, and we're convinced about our insignificance. And balancing that out can heal the heart, and I think everybody wants to be happy. You know, at the bottom line, we all want to be happy. And maybe we don't even know what that is, but we know we aren't. And so I have found for me that understanding that love tells me I'm everything, wisdom tells me I am nothing, and my life flows between them was so powerful to me that it was just right. You know, I can be magnificent and insignificant, both. And in fact, that's the reality. And it just is so relaxing to begin to see yourself in that light. So if you're stuck on one side or the other, you know, this is very helpful. And if it's right for you, you know, to check out the polarity stuff, do. And if it's not, perhaps another time. But my best wishes to everybody who was here tonight. And thank you much for having me on, Jesse. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure to have you on tonight and delving into this concept, because this is a little bit different, a little bit bigger in some ways than what people are used to wrapping their head around. And
yeah, I know. It's a little bit tough, but what to do, it's what I was given to do, so I'm doing it.
And I'm glad that you're doing that. I'm glad that you tackled that piece.
Yeah, I guess it's just mine to tackle. But, you know, people can always go to my website and go to the contact thing and write me any questions they have. I'm happy to answer them.
Awesome. And I really think you summarized with a great concept that happiness isn't found in either polarity.
That's it. And, boy, that was sure an eye-opener for me. Changed everything.
And I think when we grab that the happiness is not in any polarity, that's when you're going to find your happiness.
Yes.
So, there you
Unfortunately,
go.
It's something we have to work with every day, because the brain needs a new neural pathway, because until it has one, you have to work pretty hard to get yourself to use this new perspective. But it's doable. That's the thing. It's doable, and then life is much more workable. So I'm happy with that.
And I'm happy with that.
Well, I wish you very well in your work, Jesse. And again, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
And namaste, because I greatly appreciate you being here. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Jesse. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And just to kind of come on around for what's coming up, next week I will have Stephen Cuoco talking about his work as an intuitive publicist, reconnective intuitive, his work with NLP, and using DNA as the book of life. Stephen is a very, very fascinating person, and I know you're thoroughly going to enjoy listening to what he has to say and how he works with things. I also want to put out there that my next set of books, which are based on relationships, will be available for purchase soon. They are finished. I'm just working my way through some of the publishing aspects and making some final decisions on the books, and then I'll be able to get them out for you and make them available to you. And it's a look at how to find and develop relationships with somebody that will last a lifetime with you, and realizing that we all have both that masculine and feminine energy roles, which certainly plays into what we were talking about tonight. And those happen no matter what sex you're born into. I do have several events coming up. You want to check those out. Those are all listed at jessieannnicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. And those are happening through the end of August. So every weekend there's events going on. There's incredible things from personal emergence, mindfulness, work, business, and, you know, developing business, being more for clients, things like that. There's a whole array of different things there, so go in and check it out. I'm also working on putting together things for getting out and touring and being in some different places later this fall. If you'd like to find out more about the work I'm doing with Compassion, connect with me, check out my blog, purchase products or services that I offer, find ways to connect with me, listen to our archive shows or see what upcoming shows are coming on this program, watch video tips, all of those things. You can do it through my website at jessieannnicholsgeorge1, that's the number 1.com. And there's a great section on there for all of our Main Street Universe shows. So you can follow our hosts there. You can see what they look like there. You can catch the upcoming shows as well as the archive shows. Learn a little bit about the people that are behind the scenes here at Main Street Universe. And this information is all listed at the bottom of today's show description. My books are available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and Smashwords. So there's several different options there. That includes Kindles, PDFs, everything in that. And if you'd like to contribute to the Compassion Tour again, I've also got a campaign set up on Indiegogo for that. And that's you can share, you can leave comments. Every little bit makes a difference there. Even small amounts add up. So You can find that campaign at indiegogo.com/projects/the-compassion-tour-2013. And then I do have a special every month. I have a special going on something that I have, whether it's work or products or services. And this month, for the month of July, you have the opportunity to receive shorter coaching and reading sessions from me. I'm offering a 20-minute session for $30 and a 10-minute session for $15. To take advantage of that, you can just email me, and the email you send that to is jessie@jessieannnicholsgeorge1. Again, that's the number 1.com. And so that's a great option there. And I've also created recently Jessie's Quantum Club, and you can learn more about that at jessiesquantumclub.eventbrite.com. There's a great video up there that tells you about it and what it is, so check that out. And I also want to mention, don't forget that we've got several shows right here on Main Street Universe throughout the week. We have on Sunday nights Darren Bouquer, who's a reader at Madame Laveau in New Orleans, doing spiritual insights. Monday nights is Kevin Baird walking on the sidewalk with his Horizon Oracle Journeys deck. That's a deck that Kevin created himself. You can check out more about that deck, some of the meanings and things behind it, on his website at templeofgaia.com. Tuesdays, we have Inner Wisdom with Mary Phelan. Wednesday nights, we have Daniel, Janice, and Brett, who is on our flagship show, and that is called Main Street Universe. They have a variety of different guests that come on those shows. If you're ever looking for readings or things like that, I would suggest going into Darren's show, Kevin's show, or Mary's show. They all do readings on their show, and they're very good, and they all have different perspectives and different ways that they do their readings. So that can be very useful if you're looking for some insight. And our latest edition, which is, is now on Thursdays, we have Queen Mother Amaku discussing her work with Egyptian culture. And then, of course, Friday nights right here is Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. And I just want to say, this is Jessie Ann Nichols George. I want to thank you so much for being here tonight. I look forward to seeing you back here next week as we delve more into Activating Compassion. And don't forget, if you've enjoyed the show this evening, to share it with others. It is going to be available at the same link right here in our archives. And I am going to go ahead and leave you with a song by Shimshai. It's called Yearning For, also known as Over and Over. And again, Shimshai is a band that I met in the Arizona area, really wonderful group. And they started off as a small kind of eclectic group playing at these little tiny coffee shops around the area in the Sedona area. And now they're just traveling all over the world, playing concerts everywhere and doing these incredible things. And you can also go to their website at shimshai.com. That's S-H-I-M-S-H-A-I.com. And they've also got some free downloads every now and then that you can get hold of. You can connect with them on Facebook as well. So I want to thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you back here again next week right here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. May you enjoy the rest of your weekend and have an amazing week. Take care.
If I could see what makes me blind, I would soar to the edge of my mind. And to touch what seems unreal, just to show you the way that I feel. And we are in time with time, one with the season of change inside. And we are in tune with the tune, caught in a balance of sun and moon. Eternity, and we see it eye to eye. lover, learning to walk just a little bit slower, whispering secrets, I bet you can't keep it, no turning back now, this time we'll reveal it, one to another, all we'll discover, the essence within the most beautiful lover. Time is still turning, the love is still burning, deep in your spirit, your heart still yearning for. Still burning, the love is still burning.